Good evening, everybody from Gustavus City Hall, and welcome to the City Council work session for March. And next week is our general meeting on March 13th. And our agenda tonight is mainly to go through the agenda for next week's general meeting and make sure we've got everything. We're all ready to work on that or to decide, make decisions on it next week. So I'd like to begin by asking Councilmember Driscoll, please, to read our vision statement.
We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources, with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety, while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain a closeness with and caring for each other individually and collectively, while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll just start working our way through the agenda then for next week. And we'll, as usual, begin with a review of the minutes and approval of that. So I hope everybody will, if you haven't been through them and sent back a note to the clerk saying that they're fine or you've got any suggestions, please do. And we'll be able to dispatch them quickly next week. We'll have staff reports from the Gustavus Public Library, from the city treasurer as usual, and the city administrator will have a report. And so Kathy Leary's online. And so Kathy, did you have anything you wanted to report to us now, or do you want to do it next week? It's up to you.
Report some things now. I mean, I can repeat it next week, but I can just generally let folks know what I've been working on if you want.
Yeah, I'm always glad to hear all the stuff. It's hard for me to keep up. You do so much, I can't always keep up with all of it. So let's hear it.
Well, one of the things, so we've gotten three different grants in the last month. One is the Good River Bridge CTP application. One is the Gustavus Side Path TAP submitted. And the other one is the Swiffer grant that went into the EPA for the composting facility. And so all of those, I mean, we had help with Solstice writing these things and Jim Makoviak, who helped put together the Side Path application for TAP. And I was busy sort of editing all of those and getting letters of support from various folks that we hope would help improve our scores on these applications. I'm hoping to get the DRC recycle, the recycle facility in for the congressionally directed spending for Senator Murkowski's office, and I'm in contact with Senator Murkowski's staff on this. Did a little more work with Mike and Ben and departments on the budget. Sadly, I had to go down and take photos of the vandalism at the beach and file a police report for the beach sign and the dog waste station. And we've worked with Kathy Hawker, who has generously repainted the beach sign, and now there's a request out for quotes to repair it. I was at the Alaska Municipal League meeting in Juneau, the legislative meetings. I met with our delegation and Senators Olson, Hoffman, Representative Putkatuk. A lot of these people are in finance committees, so, and I know them from past working, so I went and saw them, talked to them a little bit about some of our projects. I also met with Senator Bishop from Fairbanks, and I spoke with him about the possibility of acquiring a dredge for a gravel pit. He's a retired equipment, operator, and he's also on Transportation and Senate Finance. So I just wanted to put that on his radar in case it comes up with our CAPSIS requests. So the CAPSIS request list of what gets moved forward from the list that we submit is kind of a deep, dark secret until the capital budget's revealed. So I don't really know where we're at with our requests yet, or even if they make the cut, whether they'll get funded or not, but we still have our three CAPSIS, requests that we're waiting to find out how we fared with those. So, you know, there was a lot going on during those 3 days. And I also met with the governor's chief of staff and talked about some projects and talked about the rural remote issues with CDL licenses with him. And I'm supposed to have a meeting with administration on that next week. So that's what I've been doing.
And been really busy. And thanks for all that work during the AML meeting and the contacts with our representatives and the governor's office. And that keeps us in front of them, and they remind them who we are and what we're interested in. And it always really is helpful. Does anybody want to ask Kathy any questions about stuff she's been doing?
So this is, Janine. I'm just curious as to how we're going to address the vandalism in the beach. Do we, as a council, do we address it to the public? Do we just ignore it? I know you say that you said you made a, you know, filed a police report, but I'd just like to know, just how it is that as a council or a city, we're gonna react or not, or what if there's any plan.
Well,
Kathy, I guess I can.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead, Kathy. What's your?
Well, my initial thought was, I mean, besides the police report, I mean, they can't really do anything about it unless we have it on, you know, good cause to know who it might be. My initial reaction was to put out a reward, leading to, you know, the arrest or prosecution of whoever might have done that. The attorney seemed to think that we were well within our rights to do that. Whether or not we wanted to spend the money on it, it's a whole different thing. There were some private citizens who offered up to contribute to the reward, but we decided not to do that this time. We just go ahead and replace the things and put them back and see what happened. And if it happens again, then we'll move forward with doing that. There's people who just think it's petty vandalism, but if it comes to more than $750, it's actually a Class C felony. And I don't think people really realize that. So, you know, we're in a holding pattern right now, but I feel like if it happens again, then we need to move forward with some harsher measures.
Thanks. I could add that, we could put out a reward. I don't know that it would get any, it would result in anybody being turned in on it. I sort of doubt that somebody would, the people who know who did it probably aren't going to tell on the person who did. It is a little discouraging that there are people who aren't more thoughtful about our community. But my view is we'll just fix it, and we'll fix it as soon as we can. Right now, the ground's too frozen to put a new post in, but Ben's going to be in contact with some possible small contractors who would be interested in a little bit of work, and we'll pay him to fix it. With Kathy finishing up the sign, it's ready, or soon will be ready to put it on. So as soon as the ground is good, there really were just two posts that were cut. And one's an 8x8, one of the two posts that held up the beach name sign. And then the other one was one that had a no vehicle sign on it. We've talked about with regard to replacing the dog waste bins, that we would actually put in one wooden post there and mount the no vehicle sign on it and mount the dog waste things onto that instead of replacing the one that was cut. And we probably have put a similar one on the other side. It might look better than the plastic post. And then on that one, we can also mount a no vehicle sign. So we're making double use of the posts and try to make it look as nice as we can and minimize the number of posts and signs. Maybe it'll be kind of like the situation with the Nagoonberry Trail where people broke through the barrier there several times and Hank Lunford just kept putting it up and pretty soon people got used to the fact that it wasn't going to do any good to take it down because it's going back up. And so that's kind of where we are. Do you have any other feelings about that? I know we're all kind of disgusted over it, but one of those things we gotta, it's like repairing the roads, we just fix stuff.
So, it's really disconcerting that that's a way that individuals feel is an acceptable way to act. I know we don't have any reason or want to, the not having vehicles on the beach is not open to discussion. It's not open to change. But I wonder if there is a way to make a dialogue with people, whether it's through some kind of a conversation or something to, to address the idea that vandalism in this town is not acceptable. And that, I guess when I think about, access to that beach, I guess it comes back to my idea of wanting to at least put out some type of a wheelchair access that could be it. And I'm also thinking that maybe even, so if it's access to the beach and it's not motorized, there's other options to be able to have access to the beach with non-motorized options in terms of people who want to do fires and they want to carry firewood or picnic stuff. Is a wheelbarrow, okay? Or should we be thinking of, like a stronger cart, like those garden carts that are a four-wheel thing with a, rate that you can pull that's over a, uneven terrain. It's like, so if we've taken, from people's perspective, we've taken motorized access away, but the idea isn't to take access away. Is there something that would be acceptable to those people who really want that access that we can do to help? That would just be my question, is like, what can we do to help with access? And would that address the situation or not? And I don't really have answers, but I'd like to see some type of a dialogue, perhaps.
Sure. I can say our Hardin Beach Trail project bid closes tomorrow. So we'll be opening our bids tomorrow. And I hope to have that project underway this spring, which will make it all the easier for rolling a wheelchair, at least out to the bench on the west side, and the fire ring will have the trail will route to the fire ring as well, and will improve the fire ring. I really like your suggestion about purchasing one of those fat tired wheelchairs that we could have out there. And so I want to continue to look into that and maybe see if we can get one of those this summer. We might want to build a little shelter or something for it. I like that idea. Really all that's closed to motor vehicles is the two tracks on either side of Dock Road. They're 15 some acres each. And the acreage is slightly bigger than that now because the tracks extend down to the mean high tide line with isostatic rebound. People can drive all over Gustavus. We got 23 miles of city roads. There must be another 10 or 15 miles of other trails that on mental health land and so forth. Got the 10 miles of or so of asphalt road. You can drive to the beach. I don't think anybody needs to drive on the beach. And we're the only part that's closed is that beach park, and it's contrary to some of the statements that were made online, there was very strong majority public support for closing that. And that closure is also in line with the legal requirements of the quieting title for that made those two pieces of those two tracts of land public property, made them state owned property. So there's a legal restriction there that applies to that we are acknowledging with this rule. So we'll continue to keep the signage in place and hope people will comply with the wishes of the great majority of the community on this. And still, at the same time, we'll do everything we can to make it as easy for everybody to enjoy, even in a wheelchair. But I think most of the people who were raising complaints about this were not wheelchair users. So, but we're going to make it so it's a beach for everybody to the best extent we can. And then there's also more beach down off the southeast end of the runway that's not close. The state, that's state DNR land. DNR has not enforced any non-vehicle use down there. It gets heavy use. And unfortunately, it gets beat up in the way that we're trying not to beat up the beach. It's kind of my view on it. But we'll keep trying to make it as useful for everybody that we can. Okay, even our volume seemed to be a little low here in the room. Okay, well, I've got the microphone pretty close, but I'll try to make sure I'm speaking closer to the mic. Maybe that'll help. So, okay. And thanks, Kathy, for that report. On the consent agenda, we'll have our certificate of records destruction, some old grant records that are due to be removed from our paper files. We'll approve that. And we'll have the introduction of the NCO for capital project funding for the radio repeater tower, because we have that project out to bid. And we need to have funding in place for it. And that's item 6 in your packet. And what we're doing there is putting in $43,000 for that tower. We think that's enough to cover the installation construction costs and the hookup to the fire hall. And it also leaves room for our project manager, John Berry, to cover his time on the project as the project managing engineer. So that's on the agenda for introduction, and then we will be voting on that in April. There'll be a public hearing in April for that one. And by then, the bids will be in for the project. And if we need to adjust the amount on that one way or the other, up or down, we can do it in April. But at least we'll have it in place so that once we have bids in and select our contractor, they can go ahead and get that thing into the schedule to get it built this summer. Okay. Next item, ordinance for public hearing. Oh yeah, question? Sorry, I should have asked you for questions.
So I have a question that's just maybe appropriate to this as well as to other items. So as we're putting this out and there'll be public comment on an item on this item, how does the public get the background information to read about it in order to be informed to be making comments? Is there more than just, I mean, they get this packet, and I'm asking that for the public. I'm also asking that for myself. And so it says what it is, but if you wanted to get the background information or read more about it, how do you do that?
I think that's a great question. And maybe, Karen, we when we put this packet out, we could put the RFQ in it, I suppose, that has the, or at least the design documents that go with it for background for them. What do you think?
Well, I think that's a lot for a packet, but you know, people can call me at City Hall. I've got the scoping documents. I mean, the best, I mean, it's up to you. I'll do as directed. But if we're going to put the scoping documents and all these packets and all, you know, all every little piece of information, you're going to have 100 page packets. I don't know.
The RFQ gets posted. I've forgotten now whether it's, is it out already or, Chief, remind me. I've forgotten whether, we've got several. I think maybe John Barry.
RFQ is posted.
Huh? The RFQ for the installation is posted, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So the RFQ is posted with, and it's would be available online and at the post office, so people can look at those there or they can call us. But essentially, we are putting up the 50-foot tower that we already own. And in fact, we've owned it for over a decade. It was originally going to go up on at the Y on the Hydro Road for a similar purpose installation. But at the time, we ran into a FERC permitting problem and that hadn't been covered, and so the council just canceled the project at that time, and we've had the tower stored all this time, so we decided now is the time to get it put up with the old antenna beginning to fail. It was time to get the tower up so that we have proper coverage of our whole community. We'll be able to reach areas like Owenville, where most of our responders are, and they're out of range of the fire radio repeater tower. So, so we're putting it so that we've had, it requires a concrete base that's designed by engineers, and we have instructions in the RFQ for the assembly of it. John Barry is the project manager again on it. So, that's how it's working.
So if I may, I guess I really maybe want some input from other council members or what they think in terms of the information. I'm feeling like I don't have information at my fingertips that I would like to have in order to make informed decisions. And I certainly, you know, we talk about this, but I think that in terms of if we're voting on something and we're, you know, having public comment, I think there needs to be an easy way to have that information disseminated. And perhaps, you know, I understand you don't want to have the packet be have more information than it needs, but I would rather have it have more than it needs than have it less than it needs. And maybe it's a link to where these documents are, you know? And so maybe the whole, if Karen is saying it would be 100 pages, which I'm not sure it would be, but if you wanted to have a link to the anything that's referenced that we're going to be talking about, having the links to what the background information is, because I'm seeing this in terms of this tower. I'm seeing it in terms of the bike path. When I wanted to find more information, I don't have it. And I feel like it does a disservice to the community if we're to make decisions when we don't have all the information at our fingertips. And I'm wondering if other council members feel the same way, if members of the public would be more engaged if they had more information. And that's why I'm, you know, bringing this up.
Sure. Shelley.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My comment would be that perhaps using the mayor's report with the links, because you usually give us a good analysis of all of the projects that are happening and going on. And that way people would have access to it without unduly burdening the monthly, you know, the packet. Is that a possibility?
Sure. And I can do that for this project and think about how to do it on the rest of them. But I think Janine's got a really good general point here that maybe we need a page on our webpage or something with upcoming projects, and it has, say, the scoping document, design documents on there, that sort of thing. So there's always background and somebody can look on those, you know, for projects, they could look on a project webpage or something. So we can sure look into how to do that.
And so would these projects, I mean, be the ones that are going to be germane to the council meetings? And I think that it's important to have them out there in general, but I also think it's really important that if it's a topic that we're talking about and we're going to have public comment on and we're going to be voting on, those are the ones that I think are most important to have the information in a timely fashion. And so I think that having them in your report is one option, but I don't think that it addresses my concern that it's not all in one place in this packet. To me, it seems like the purpose of the packet is to give you all the information you need for that meeting, and having the links in the packet to the things that are on the agenda, I personally would find very helpful. And I think as a community member, even if I wasn't on the board, I would find that helpful, because otherwise I feel like these are books that are just the clip notes and we don't have the meat to refer to. And we talk about it, some of them at meetings, but most of the public's not at the meeting. And I'd like to be able to have 2 days before the meeting refresh what all this was, so I would be more informed when I make a decision.
Yeah, the packet, by the way, does, of course, have the NCO in it, and that's the only thing we're voting on this next week is the NCO.
Now,
what you're pointing out is that the NCO doesn't have background information that describes the project that will fund. And so, and I think you're 100% right on that. So, let's see what we can figure out to have links to related information somehow. So that everybody who wants to dive a little deeper into it, other than just what it says in the NCO that it's to fund this project, they can understand a little bit more about the project if they didn't remember what was involved in it. So, yeah, let's see what we can do.
Hello.
Take that as a great comment.
If I might, Janelle.
Kathy.
So the bike path project is something that's been going on like since 2014 or before. And so, you know, there's been several councils and things since then. It even took me a while to come up to speed, and Councilmember Makowiak had to provide a lot of that background so we could pull the grant together. because it's considered a meeting to copy all the council members, every time we have a back and forth about the project or a document or a draft or something like that, I mean, there's a lot of tracking to do in something like this, but at the end of the day, if you wanted to read the grant proposal, you know, we could make sure that we could make an electronic folder or something to put a link to it, but trying to gather up all the backup from every single thing, because we do these one step at a time. We have a scoping document, we have an NCO, we have and it passes through several iterations of the process before it gets to approval. And so, you know, as councils change and members change, those things, you know, go missing. But they are in the minutes, and they are in the, you know, they are in the, the past actions of the city council, and they are out there. It's just sometimes they get stopped and then they get resurrected, and, you know, staff change, council members change. And so it's not as easy as you might think to just keep everything in one spot, is my point, I guess.
We'll take that offline and see what we can do. I really think it might make sense to have a page on the city website that is a go-to thing on projects, at least. Now, that wouldn't address things that weren't there, are on the agenda that aren't projects. And so we just have to make sure that we've got enough information in a packet on a an item that is on the agenda that is not a project. So we address those otherwise. But I think we can make some progress on that, come up with something.
Yeah, I'll just note that's, yeah. I'm with you, Janine, on that. I would like to also have a little bit better access to information, though most of the time I feel like I'm able to find everything that I need to at least understand what we're going for. Depending, I can also see Kathy's point about it being having the potential to turn into a little bit of a rabbit hole about, you know, how much information do we need to keep in like one centralized archive. But for example, while we've been talking, I pulled up the RFQ for the fire department radio repeater tower, and it has, well, most of it is just information for the bidding contractor to fill out, but then at the very end it has a little bit of information, but even then it just references other documents that I don't know where they are, so it's hard to say whether that's, you know, do we need to, should we make sure all the relevant documentation is included in the RFQ, because then you have to print all of that and put it at the post office, right? So that becomes a little bit of a pain, but it does seem like having the information available, and it turns into a data management schema that becomes a big project. I've spent some time thinking about it, and with the current web software we are using to run our website, it would be a significant challenge unless we were going to like try and find a project tracker app that somehow plugged in. And I don't know if that's even possible with the web software we're using, but it would be, I think it's not impossible, but it's striking the balance between, you know, adding like a Herculean effort on the staff member's part and getting the right amount of information out there becomes the balance we have to live in. So likewise, interested in working towards more information though, so we can all make better decisions. I think that's important.
I just want to remind everybody that City Hall is literally a phone call away. And if you would like more information, I'm happy to provide it in the meantime until we can come up with a better solution. But
if it's that easy to get as a phone call, I'm not understanding why it can't be included in a packet. I think going back to what Kathy said is that some of the stuff has been, you know, 5 years ago or other councils. And so this council that's here currently today doesn't have that luxury of the memory from the time before we were on the council. And so there is some document that is the most current one that you must be working off of. And I still think that a link to it, or, you know, to be able to find what we're voting on, should not be that arduous. And if you can do it at the phone call, why can't it be done proactively, that it's out there for people who want to delve a little bit deeper?
Okay, well, we can see what we can do there. There are a lot of documents with, depending on the size of the project, there are a lot of documents that we start out with a scoping document, but then there are design documents, there may be agreements with the consulting engineer. When we put it out to bid, there are bid documents, which we usually have in the packet when they're being approved. Then there are award documents, there's a whole bunch of stuff, but I think we could reduce that down to maybe having, for each project that we have on the agenda, on the webpage, there could be the scoping document, there could be design documents, and an RFQ if it's already, or ITB, invitation to bid, if it's a bigger project, it would all be available there. So it'd be easier for somebody, there'd be one go-to site for that. Yeah, so we'll just have to see if we if it's possible to put that on the web, or if we have to have it on the city's server, and the clerk can direct somebody to it or whatever. We'll have to figure out how to do it. But yeah, the things, by the way, that we are voting on are always in the packet, and in this case, it's just the funding for it. The question was whether the other backup explanatory information was how to reach it. Yeah.
Your mic is updated now.
Yeah. So I initially, when joining the council, sort of had the same thought. You know, it was kind of tough to find the information, and sometimes also guilty of negligence on my part too, just like being busy throughout the week and then getting a packet and going, wow, this is a big decision. I don't know if I have enough information, and it's sort of overwhelming. But then with a little bit more time on the council, realizing that the information is available made it a lot easier with a little bit more time. And I think that just for the sake of process and everything that sort of our staff has to do, it's a lot of work to go through that process and add an additional step to make that information available when I think it was Brian that said that, you know, packet per packet based on the decision that we're making at that time, because sometimes it's just about moving the money around for a project that we already know about, depending on who's been on the council for how long, and sort of the big picture of the project that we're talking about might not be what we're discussing at that time. It might just be the actual process of moving the money that we're talking about. And so I think packet for packet, we're given the amount of information that is necessary weekly or to inform folks of what we're doing in that moment. And based on the amount of requests that, say, someone like Karen or Kathy would have week for week to make that information available, I feel like it would be an effort in procedure to tack on a lot of work for something that's only going to get tapped into periodically. And that I would be more on the side of, like, you know, if people want more information, to reach out for it, because I have had those situations, whether it's reaching out to the administrator, reaching out to Mike, or reaching out to Karen about a topic that I don't feel like I have enough information of, and I've been very easily directed to that information in a reasonable amount of time. I just don't think it would be worth it to have that be sort of a routine thing that's happening all the time, because the amount of times that we do need more information seems like an extra step. But I'm not saying that there's a good solution to it. It's just that it's been solved for me in different ways. And I'm just leery of adding any extra step based on the staffing capabilities that we have. If we had, like, you know, an administrative assistant in addition to the clerk and administrator, that would be a really good task for them to add these additional things to make information more accessible. But again, I think it's there if we look for it and ask for it.
Okay, any other comments from anybody on that? Okay. Well, we'll see what we can do around that idea. Okay, that's the consent agenda. So we're just introducing that that NCO this time, and then we'll actually have a public hearing in April on that one. That would take us on to the ordinance for public hearing, and the only ordinance for public hearing is on another NCO that we introduced last month, and that's 23-14. And if you check in your packet on page 10, that's an NCO, you may recall from the description last month, that we are returning excess funds from two projects to our long-term capital improvement savings for use for recycling and other projects. We generally appropriate a little extra money for a project if we can, so that we know that we can complete the project without having it come to a screeching halt because we didn't have quite enough money. And then we return anything extra to our long-term capital savings. And so that's what that one does. And it closes out the project for the pre-processing, DRC pre-processing storage area, moves $10,697 back to savings for that one, and also the DRC's hazardous waste facility moves $9,930 back into the savings to close that one out. That's pretty straightforward, I think. Okay, any questions? And then that'll take us on to new business. And the first item, we have a requirement in our code, I guess it is, to review the Gustavus Visitors Association's marketing plan and their budget request. And we have their budget request in our budget already, and we've talked about that when we went through the budget, but their marketing plan is in here. And I don't know if you want to discuss anything about it. I read through it some time ago and I've almost forgotten all the great stuff that's in it, but is it something you want to go through at all tonight or have any discussion on, or do you want to study up on it and just be ready to give it your yay or nay next week?
Mike, may I interject here? So the ordinance says that it needs to be publicly reviewed at the general meeting.
Right. We'll have a motion at the general meeting, right?
Well, the ordinance says that it has to be reviewed publicly at the general meeting.
Right. So it'll be on the agenda for review. And so the council would discuss it. You know, and we can have we can have Leah available to answer questions, I think would be how we'd handle it.
I've already reached out to her. She's planning on being here. So the idea is that the review is not going to be taking place right now. It'll take place at the general meeting.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is if people want to discuss something about in the work session, we can always do that too. But we'll go through it in the general meeting. I guess if nobody wants to dive into something about it now.
I have thoughts on it, but that's because I wrote it. So,
yeah, right.
But that's mostly just me nitpick. We don't need to have me nitpick my own writing. I guess Leah did a lot of this as well. We really split things pretty evenly.
We have one very well-informed council member.
Yeah, plenty of questions already.
So, yeah, I think everybody ought to re-review it before the meeting and then be prepared to discuss it at the general meeting then. Yeah.
So I did look through it and I mean, it looks great. I mean, I think that the guys are got lots of big plans and I just am liking more information when Leah's here on the strategic initiatives to like increase the discoverability, showcase, but what does it actually mean? And like some of the ideas of what are the things that are actually
makes perfect sense that it might be a little bit unclear. So good way to think about it is initiatives are kind of like themes that we're trying to progress. And then if you scroll down farther, you'll see strategic initiative tasks. And those are like the concrete things that we're actually doing to try and achieve the initiatives themselves. That's sort of organizationally how it's meant to be broken up. So you have the initiatives that are kind of like, what's our mission here? What are we shooting for? And then the tasks of like, how are we actually trying to do that? And then not everything is perfectly encapsulated in that, but that's what we were going for as far as putting it together. And yeah, if you have more questions, feel free to either, you know, pen them down for the general meeting or email me them and I can review them and have a better answer for you at the general meeting. Like I said, I myself have some questions about some of this, but that's mostly I'm nitpicking budget line items and wondering why I don't exist in the budget. So, well, no, I exist in the budget. I'm just me and three other people are all one line item in the budget. And I think that's a little weird, but that's, again, nitpicking.
Okay. I guess we'll revisit that next week. The next item will be to award RFQ FY23-03. That's the RFQ for the Hardin Beach Trail at the park. That RFQ closes tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. So we will be opening bids at that time and determining who the lowest responsible bidder is and putting out a notice of intent to award on that. And then it'll go on to the agenda for next, for this Monday, so that we can award that and move forward with construction as soon as conditions are allow. And that one, I guess we should look at whether we should include the put the whole RFQ in there, which we could do in the packet, or some kind of a link or something, so you can see what the bid was based on, rather than just the bid page itself. Right now, for example, for the next project, the library bike shelter, all we've got in here is the bid page. So maybe this is an example of where we need more info in the packet, so it's clear what we're awarding, what the money is for, how it's going to be spent, what it's for. That would have the design and everything in it. So we don't have anything yet for our packet on that because it opens tomorrow. So, and then the item 10 is the Public Library Bike Shelter Award. And we had one bidder on that, Terra Construction. And that's Matt Davis's firm. A bid of $35,795, which was within our budget. We had 40 something thousand in their room for this. So the bid fell in actually very close to the engineer's estimate, as I recall. So that will be on the agenda for us to approve. And once the council, to award, that is, once council awards it, then we'll issue the contract and the purchase order to the contractor and a notice to proceed on it. So $35,795 for the bike shelter. And I might note, just for your information too, the contractor has suggested some possible change order items to the bid, some things that he thought could reduce the cost or improve the project. And our project manager, John Berry, is reviewing those. And in fact, he may have finished his review on it and emailed me a result back, but I haven't looked at his email yet on that. But we'll consider the contractor's suggestions there. And if we are going to do anything that would change the design, then we would bounce that off of the engineers that designed it, PMD, and do it, handle it as a change order. Or the contractor is said he's prepared to build it exactly as designed if that's without any of his suggested changes. So either way, we'll be proceeding on that one, we hope, expeditiously. So any question on that one?
Not really a question, but as you already mentioned, I would be interested to see more documentation on this, just sure, to have a little bit more insight into how that all comes
down. That's a good one for us to put the whole RFQ in, and which will have the design documents and everything in it too, so you'll see what we're awarding.
Great.
Okay, the next is the pedestrian bike bicycle side path application submission. And I think I'd like to have Kathy Leary summarize this item because she's worked really hard on it, working with Councilmember Muskoviac. So they're the ones who've really been driving this. Kathy, do you want to speak first? And then Jim could too.
Sure, I can. So initially we was going to be kind of difficult to apply for this under the TAP because of the 9.03% match, which would have, you know, would have been probably beyond our capabilities. But then they decided, they made a new ruling that if this project was something that was along state-owned roads, that or on state-owned roads, that the state would do the 9.03% match. There's a lot of requirements of this, you know, this application. I'm not sure how we're going to score, but if we added an additional 1 or 2% match, now we would probably score a few extra points, and it might advance from the first scoring stage process to the next one for this project. So I'm just tossing that out there. We can remove the whereas if you guys don't want to do the extra match. I think we'll have to change the language to say, instead of saying required match, because that was the boilerplate that they sent us when they were requiring the match. But we would need to say we would contribute an additional 1% of the project match, which would be about $27,000, unless you wanted to do 1.5%. But it would get us extra points in the scoring rubric for the project. And I will let Jim talk about the rest of it. You know, this was sort of a joint effort. And once we figured out that we weren't going to have to come up with that 9.03% of 2.7 million to Good River. And so we jumped on it and put it in. And so we're hoping we have to have the resolution with or without that required match. So or not the required match, sorry. We have to have the resolution for the rest of the items on there with or without the additional match. So that's up to the council, but if you have any other questions, I'm happy to answer. And Jim knows more about this because he's been working on it for several years back when we had the Safe Routes to School grant. And it was also a problem back then coming up with the money for the match. So this is our window of opportunity.
So before we go to Jim, I guess I'd clarify that the resolution is a critical part of the application. So it just shows that the city council supports this project. And that's something that's absolutely necessary for us to be successful in our grant application. This is federal money. The state would pay the 9.03% non-federal match under this. If the city wouldn't have to add any match to it, as Kathy says, it may add some, it may get us another point or two in the competitive process. If the city did 1%, we would be contributing more than the state. Jim, you want to add to this? You did a lot of work on it.
Again, this is simply boilerplate, and the estimates for the cost of this really range quite a bit. I mean, they range from less than $1 million to $2.7 million. And I think the person who made the $2.7 million estimate, I don't believe ever came to Gustavus. So that's, I don't know. But even if I would recommend, you know, appropriating $27,000 to 1% of the 2.7 million for this. I mean, we're talking about building a bike shed for nearly $40,000. And, you know, we're talking about safety here, not just keeping bicycles dry. This is a safety issue entirely. And this is cheap. And this is the cheapest thing we'd ever get. But, you know, we can just change the language in that whereas and say that the city will make available this amount of money. And call her good.
Any questions from others here for Jim or Kathy?
Brian, I'm curious, just along the lines of kind of what Janine has been talking about. I mean, having information is, I'll say that's, I mean, I obviously, with the little bit that I know and what I'm envisioning of what this project looks like, fully support what is looking to happen here and inclusive of the match. But again, for my own curiosity and trying to visualize this, and specifically in section 3 of the now therefore be it resolved, where we say that we will take on the full ownership, management, and maintenance operations and responsibilities, and that sufficient funding for the pedestrian and bicycle side path project will be available for the life of the project. I kind of get to questioning what the maintenance obligation is there. I mean, is this like a paved path on the side of the road that's totally separate from the road? What is, are we plowing it in the winter? So I get more into wondering about the details than being opposed to the project, but I guess if I were to have a worry, it would be that we end up getting a super awesome bike path and then not having the means to maintain it as it deserves to be. So that's my thought.
There's several ways to go there. I think.
Go ahead, Jim.
There's several ways to go. And what is the bike path actually? Pedestrian bicycle path, because this is for pedestrians and bicyclists, and it could also be a ski path. And whether we decide if it's for skiing, we may not want to plow it in the winter time. But you know, I think that, you know, the city may have to get like a four-wheeler with a plow on it to clear it. This is side path by definition is separate from the road, and it's separated by ideally 6.5 feet or more. And that's, again, that's a safety issue. It just doesn't work to have people riding on the sides of the road and vehicles going by. So, and that's the, again, this is a safety project. And, you know, I have all the documentation for everything that I think has ever been done regarding bicycle paths. I have them on my computer, and I'm sure the city probably has them somewhere too, but if you really want them, I can, you know, give me a thumb drive and I'll be glad to share them with you.
I would love that. If you have a quick resource you can pass me so that I can dig in deeper, because like I said, most of this is just curiosity on my part more than anything.
You know, I can drop a file by it.
We could submit you the grant, which has all the backup that we submitted to the grant.
Yeah, that would be good too. I'll say that I am strong proponent of ski path. I think if we could have a cross-country ski trail in Gustavus, like it's a solid hell yeah for me. So be all about it.
Janine.
So yeah, instead of a plow for it, you should have something that pulls and tracks and makes the ski tracks. And so you've got something where you've tracked it. And so I look back on the project's scoping document, and I just wonder if there's what is the project? And here's what it says: construction of a pedestrian bicycle side paths within the state of Alaska right-of-ways, parallel to the Gustavus Road, Mountain View Road from the Gustavus Airport to the Glacier Bay National Park boundary, approximately 5.2 miles, and from Four Corners to the Gustavus Dock, a distance of approximately 1.4 miles. So in addition to that, though, the question I did have, and I'm glad you just answered it, because one of them was, how close to the road does this go? And you said it's about, what did you say, 6 feet off of the side of the road?
I think 6.5 is considered the minimum. And you're looking at an old plan. I mean, that was something that we proposed a few years ago. Now we're talking about going from the school to Hood River Corner, the distance of 1.9 miles.
Okay, and so if we could have that document, that would be great to have the most current thing. But so just, and how wide is this? How wide of a path are we talking in terms of the bike path?
They like them to be 6 to 8 feet wide. And, you know, I think you could get away with, you know, since this isn't a high usage operation, even 5 feet wide would probably work fine. People, you know, if you're two bicyclists or approaching one another, you can just slow down a little bit. I mean, I've been on plenty of paths and you can do that.
And so does this then go within the, like the right of way, or are we talking, does it go on private land, or is there you know, 12 feet off the side of the road? And is it on one side of the road, or is it on both sides of the roads?
Janelle,
it could be on
Jim, just so you know, so because this is a a transportation project, a federal transportation project, there's very specific things that need to happen. And one of the reasons it's so expensive is the state engineers will be designing it and the state engineers will be running the project. I mean, even though we feel like the right-of-way is all taken care of, their whole right-of-way department's going to be working on making sure that there are no right-of-way issues. So just know that what we've set up to do in the past may not be something that they, you know, they're going to have a big say-so in how this happens and when it happens and if it happens. So it's not, you have a fabulous idea of what it should be, but it's going to be up to their engineers at the end of the day.
I guess I'm just wanting to get a picture in my head of what the vision is for this. And so that's what I'm all for it as well, but I just want to know what it is, a little bit more of a description of if what it is that we are either we're going to put our vote for or against to be able to support it. And I just wanted to know what it is I'm supporting and what the vision is. And I realize that now, as you're describing it, that it's not been designed yet, but I would like to know at least what you're asking for or what the vision is that we want.
There is the scoping document.
Well, that's what I have open in front of me. And the only paragraph I see that says any description of it is just what I read.
I think I could add a little bit here. We found in working with the state that if we tried to do the whole project all the way along Mountain View Road and down to Dock Road as one big project, it was going to be huge and that it would be hard possibly to get funding for it, and we ought to break it up into smaller pieces. And Jim and I too have felt that the most critical part was the part from the school to the Good River Corner, just because of the amount of traffic there and the amount of school kids that use that. But that ultimately we would hope to do other phases that would extend it to the park boundary and then also down Dock Road. And the idea is to have a safe bike path, primarily bike path, but also pedestrian path along this route that makes it safer for those users with cars going by at 35 miles an hour or even faster. And that probably the design would be a separated side path that is set some distance off of the road edge, the existing road edge, but is within the DOT right of way. So if we got out of the right of way, then we'd be purchasing right of way for it, and it would just blow the project out of possibility. What we're asking for is grant funding from the federal funding for infrastructure from the bipartisan bill, essentially, that would go through the state and the state would do the project. It's in there right away. And I think the issues that Brian brought up about maintenance and so forth are actually very germane. The way I think about it, this road is in the state right away. It's a state route that is used by cars, by pedestrians, by bicyclists, by people on skateboards even. And we tend to think about roads like this as being the domain of cars, but really they're the domain of everybody that's using them. And the state has every bit as much responsibility to care for the bicyclists, the skiers, if they're skiing there, the walkers along the road as they are with the cars. And I think they tend to think of well, this road's for cars and they don't have to deal with those other things. Well, Jim has been pointing out for a long time that we have kids on bicycles going to and from school here and cars whizzing by awfully close. And we're concerned that the state has designed a road here that is really not safe for those users. And so we're trying to find a way to provide greater safety for those other users, and particularly the kids going to school. I think it should be entirely a state project, frankly, and the state should maintain it. But we may not, if we insist on that, that they build the whole thing and maintain it, they may just say no. And, you know, so they're probably if we want to see that this thing gets done, we need to have some skin in the game. That may mean agreeing to some extra match to help. We'd be equaling the state's match. And by saying that we'll maintain it, which is something the DOT, they didn't want to bother to maintain it. So if we say we'll maintain it because we think it's important to us, then there's a much higher probability that we'll be successful in getting it done. So that's going forward, though, the actual layout, well, we have imagined that this bike path might go over the intertie line. It doesn't have to. It could be on the other side of the road. It'd be on only one side of the road and be wide enough for two-way traffic on it. But it could go over the intertie route that's already cleared and surveyed and all of that. Or the engineers and planners, when they start doing this, may decide that it's better to go on, say, the other side of the road, or some of it on the other side of the road. So we pretty much have to get the funding in place for a project that will improve safety for those other users of the road, and then work with the engineers as they develop a schematic design first and try to shape it as we think is the best fit for us. So there could be a lot of variation. There are a lot of options that could be followed for how this thing actually looks. But those are decisions that are down the road. The first thing is to get funding for it, and that's where we are now. Does that help? Jim, did I describe that okay for you?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, you mentioned DOT's desire for automobiles or servicing automobiles. And DOT was out here, and this is quite a few years ago, and at a public meeting, and we suggested bicycle pedestrian trails along the road. And the DOT guy said, no, we do cars. We don't do pedestrians and bicycles. He just dismissed it entirely. But that's not the way it should be. And, you know,
they're DOT engineers like everywhere else.
Yeah. Well, actually, DOT's got some very good people working for it now, and they have people that deal specifically with this sort of thing. And I met with Julius, is his name, and I met with him in Haines last year. And, you know, he'd like to see things like this, and he's an avid bicycler himself. And it's good to see that sort of thing in DOT. So maybe we can help them change the traditional mindset a little bit more.
Certainly. So what do you think, what does everybody think? Should we commit to a 1% match on this? If it's $2.7 million, we're looking at $27,000. Not a lot. Compared to what, I mean, we'll be spending that much on fixing turnarounds on our roads.
I would say definitely if that increases our chances of getting the remainder funded, that's a small price to pay for what we're getting out of the deal. And we've been talking about this for a very long time. And, you know, all it takes is one accident with someone that you know and love and care about to make it seem silly to not do that.
Yeah. I mean, fully support that. I think even
with nodding around the table here. So
yeah,
I know Jim's in favor of it. So okay, we will write the 1% into this, and that's how it'll appear in the packet. And we'll continue to have the section 3 on maintenance that we would commit to maintaining it. Probably the way we would plow that would be with a bobcat, is my guess.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I think we would probably plow it because it is supposed to be available for kids to ride their bikes on to school, and they need to do that in the winter too. So my guess is that it would remain primarily a bike path, unless there's some way to leave one side of it for just with snow on it for skiing. I don't know. But we'll have to see how it's actually configured to make a big difference on that. Okay.
Well, no, I want to say thank you, guys. You know, this is as close as I think as we've ever been, and hopefully it comes to fruition.
Okay. And we'll try to get enough information on our website so people who are wondering about the details will know what it's.
Well, yeah, and thank and you. And I had prepared on. Just to,
I had prepared another.
Spent a lot of time. Oh, go ahead.
I had prepared another resolution that actually describes it a little bit more and gives the reasons for doing it and the benefits. But you know, the state requires this language, you know, in the application. So this is the resolution we're dealing with right now. But I can, as a draft, I can, you know, send that to Karen, and you guys can she can spread it around.
I just sent Karen the grant application and all the attachments. It's a very, it's a large document. She said she can send it to the council members. So you'll have that to look at before the meeting next week. And so, but just be advised that it's quite a sizable document. It might take a little bit of time to receive it, or those of you that might have limited space on your, you know, in your technology, it might, hopefully you'll all receive it. That's all I'm saying.
Well, we're not going to read it on your iPhone. Yeah, you'll get an impression for how much work Kathy is and the grant writers have spent on this. It's a big project, and it's taken a lot of work too. We hope we're successful. If we're not successful this round, we'll evaluate where we were short and try it again next year. So that's kind of the plan, or look for other opportunities. Okay, that takes us to the next item. That is a resolution that I wrote and sent out to you all about a month ago to take a look at. And that's a resolution establishing City of Gustavus policy and procedure for annual review and adjustments of salaries and wages in the operating budget. And what you'll recall, what I was trying to do here is set forth a policy and procedure. So there's a resolution that introduces the policy and procedure, and we adopt policy and procedure by resolution. So the resolution is there to adopt the policy and procedure. The resolution in the be it resolved section has some of the details that are in the policy and procedure, and then is they're sort of expanded in the policy and procedure a little bit. The intent again was to set forth a procedure whereby we more consistently look at pay rates and so forth for staff when at the time that we're doing the operating budget, and we consider whether to make adjustments for cost of living increases or other reasons, other competitive reasons and that sort of thing. So it sets forth a procedure that I think will work. If we do this, we'll have a more consistent basis for setting the salaries level that we set when we approved the budget. So I think you've all had a little time well over the last month to look this over. At least one council member got back to me and said he had read it. So do any of you want to ask questions about this or have suggestions? Otherwise, this is how it goes on to the agenda for approval. Kelly, looks like you're reaching for the mic. Turn it on then.
Actually, I'd be willing to hear from others before I make my comments, because okay. They're fairly lengthy.
Well, I think it was at the last budget session where Shelley mentioned the consumer price index out of Anchorage not being the best indicator necessarily, but we kind of talked about it then, how that's kind of what we have. And it's the best we have as far as trying to get a handle on what the number would look like to preserve our employees' purchasing power in the market, short of generating our own Gustavus regional inflation index based on the price of lumber and eggs at Toshco, which and getting into administrative burdens again. Mm-hmm. But I reviewing this, I think that it seems pretty reasonable, and I like that it's more, it gives some guidelines and some confines in which to operate and some list of things to consider, but doesn't try and provide an exact formula for people to necessarily game their way around into you see a lot of in wage structures, I feel like I tend to see people who it turns into an odd game of incentives that you have to worry about aligning. And I feel like this doesn't, as much as we can, doesn't do that so much. So I support it for, maybe not the perfect, completely perfect solution, but certainly doing well with what we have.
I note that it's pretty much what we've done the last couple of years, but Shelley.
Okay. I guess I did raise the consumer price index using that because I'd gone to the Bureau of Labor Standards, where it says that not included in the CPI are the spending patterns of people living in rural, non-metropolitan areas. That is fairly clearly an urban index, which is in Alaska is Anchorage. I'm not entirely sure whether Fairbanks is included too, but I've since come to realize that it is an indicator, and it's one of the few that we have, and it's generally accepted. The question I have is, once you accept a COLA, cost of living increase, it appears that it becomes part of the base salary. Is that correct?
Yes, their salary would go up by that amount.
Okay. So I guess I like having some flexibility of it not being, it doesn't look like the language is that it's mandatory, but that it is, that it can be one of the factors that we take into account. The reason I bring it up is because the COLA, one of the charts I found showed that the COLA or that the CPI dropped to -4% in 2020. And that was probably a COVID related event, but it's, we didn't take 4% off people's salaries in 2020 or 2021, I guess, because of that. So I would like to be able to have access to that information and possibly use it if we feel that it's appropriate to ensure that people have the, the benefit of that they're not losing money by virtue of their salaries. The other thing, I was encouraged to come up with some other factors and thanks to Susan Warner, who's pretty amazing about things, she steered me to the Alaska taxable form. It looks like the most recent is 2021. There's a table which called 1A, and I don't know the best way of doing this. I could send it out through the clerk, but it's a really valuable table. It shows the basically the tax burden on all communities in Alaska, it includes property tax, sales tax, other tax, population, and tax per capita. So what becomes clear is that that we would have to be careful about not being included with communities that have property tax, and we should also. So I guess that's a reference document. The points that I wanted to make, I guess, is that Well, first of all, I know that you did circulate the document early. I felt uncomfortable about having a policy discussion, even one-on-one or through the mayor, about a policy issue, particularly one that has fiscal consequences. So I think it's somewhat awkward, but I did, it looks sort of like a Civil War battlefield, I'm afraid, with the redlining. But the points that I'm trying to make are, I have a concern about the word competitive, and that if we're going to be competitive, I would prefer comparable to competitive. If we're competitive, we should define what our market is and what is our comparable market. It should be a community that doesn't have property tax, a community more that is similar in population to ours, so that we don't, you can see that what our current tax burden for Gustavus is $543 per capita. Anchorage is $2,239. Juneau is $3,104. So I think we need to make sure that we're apples and apples and oranges, that we look at communities with the, that, you know, of the same size and have the same equivalent tax base.
So, I've got it. Yeah, let's expand on that. I don't see the point of that at all, I'm afraid. Remember, there are two pieces to this.
Mm-hmm.
COLA is one thing,
mm-hmm.
and COLA is based on the rise of prices that people are paying for their rent, for their groceries and their gasoline and so forth. The competitive thing is a separate issue from COLA that ask, is the amount that is what we are paying competitive with other employers, or comparable to other employers, if you prefer that. Competitive is usually the term used in my experience, but we're in a competitive marketplace for labor, in other words. So are we able to compete with those other employers to hire good people for our staff? And are we continuing to pay them that competitive wage? So that is one assessment that is separate sort of from COLA.
I understand. And I had slid over from COLA, but I was talking about it as a separate salary indicator.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then I'm not sure that it makes any difference to me whether they have property tax, sales tax, or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that taxes are included in, for example, in the CPI. It's a basket of goods for the most part, I think. It's an interesting consideration, though. We, for example, we have a pretty low tax environment here. And so that may make it easier for us to compete with, say, a job in Juneau, because somebody can say, well, maybe I don't make quite as much money in Gustavus, but I don't have to pay 7% sales tax and property tax and whatever else they got over there. So you make a good point that could be part of the competitive nature, particularly when we're considering comparing to other communities, which is partly what we do when we look at the AML salary table. That wouldn't be the same kind of consideration, though, if we're trying to be competitive with the National Park Service pay rates and that sort of thing, because they're in the same.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what I'm, and I'm not talking about COLA or the Consumer Price Index here at all. It's just that if we're going to be setting salaries, we're not in a position to compete with Anchorage or other communities that are on the road and have, large economies,
right,
based on, their industry. We have a, basically pretty much a seasonal economy. So what I'm saying is that when we talk about competitive, it should be tied to communities that are closer in terms of our size and our ability to taxation, and having, we shouldn't be trying to compete with communities, large urban communities that have property tax bases. So that's kind of the point.
Or for that matter, for which the job is much bigger job.
Yeah. And yes, and yeah. I was suggesting that we look at, you know, degree requirements, experience, relevant experience, and not necessarily. We just, I guess I'm kind of starting to kind of lose my train of thought here, but have an objective measure for the job description, the duties and responsibilities, the relevant work experience. Because this is a sort of salaries, it doesn't really talk about an initial positions, but I think we should have a local hire, have a factor that's a, positive factor for local hire. So I have played around with the language. I would like to work it again, and I can circulate, this table from the Alaska tax table. There's one, just so we can see that we are, and it has, I mean, we're here are the, starting sort of roughly here are the communities that don't have property tax, and we're here at 543, and then so there's a whole lot of communities on page two that they don't have property tax. So I would like to. There doesn't seem to be a way of filtering, the property, but I'd like to look at the communities that are sort of comparable to us, maybe population. A plus or minus 200 to Gustavus, and look at what communities we would be competing with. Instead of we're not going to be competing with Chevron and the municipality and the state of Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's one of the reasons we use the AML salary table, because it has the size of the community and describes the job, and we try to make a judgment: is this similar or not? We're mostly comparing to, frankly, to other municipalities by using the AML salary table, because that doesn't deal with private industry, but we might look at that first, and then, but we also be thinking, well, is there a lot of demand for skilled workers, say from the National Park Service or something, that is likely to draw staff away from us or make it hard for us to hire local people because they're getting sucked up by the Park Service. So that's a factor that's outside of using the AML table. And that's what I was trying to address in other factors, in when I referred to other factors that relate to the local labor market or the statewide labor market that we're hiring out of.
I just think we have to define. We have to be fairly precise. I mean, when you say the statewide labor market, that's to me, that's super broad. But there was one other question that I had, which was the references to the regional inflation rate. I don't know. You refer to the regional inflation rate from the Anchorage Consumer Price Index. I don't know what that means, and I don't know unless they're considering, Alaska, the entire region. What is the regional inflation rate?
The Anchorage CPI is the only CPI for Alaska.
Yeah. So this is really actually a misnomer. There's not like a Southeast regional inflation rate.
The region is Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think Kyle wanted to cut into this, and I don't want to.
Yeah. And I think to an extent, it's our due diligence to look at this and take responsibility and really put a lot of effort into how we word this, but I think the overall idea is great, and you will hear me say this many times, that advocating for taking care of our employees is one of the biggest things, if not the biggest thing, that we can do, especially as far as retention and keeping them around and keeping them from looking at those part jobs when they come, because you don't often hear of it going the other way around, of somebody leaving their job at the park to come work for the city. You'll hear a lot of times that it's a lot more difficult here. The workload is higher. There's a lot of scrutiny. There's a lot of pressure of being a city employee, especially, working within City Hall. And we're talking about employing professionals, and it's hard to really compare with these other communities that don't have the same factors. So it's really, really tough. And so I think truly with some of the way that this is worded, with compensating employees competitively within the state of Alaska employment market, you know, it's hard to really compare a community that, based on the population and the large employer that we have in town, being the Park Service for year-round employment, it's tough to do apples to apples and oranges to oranges. It's really, really difficult to sort of truly capture what that factor is and how much that plays. But ultimately, you know, we ask a lot of our employees, and I think that if we can find a way collectively to sort of word this to where everybody's happy with it and that we're doing that fairly, I would err on the side of leading the charge, as opposed to like following and modeling other communities to take better care of our employees and keep them happier and keep them in their positions so they're not sniffing around for park jobs, frankly. But especially the whereas, where we're talking about employee skills evolve with experience and applicable training, and the market of those values and skills may change. Like every year, people get better, more competent in their jobs, they're no more, and to have to hire and rehire, that's something that we even talk about at the park all the time, as far as like keeping an retaining good employees and having to spend so much money training and retraining and all that, that I just think getting everybody on board for just doing whatever we can within the means that we have to pay our folks as adequately as possible, even if that is sort of pushing the envelope in a way that's seeming to some questionable, just from being on the council and see everything that our employees do and looking at those, the current wages, I don't feel like there's any sort of negligence. And in fact, I feel like we could advocate even higher to pay people more, because these are professional people that we want to keep in their roles and develop them further. So that's my soapbox, but that's really all I got. It's just advocating for employees and doing whatever we can to pay them as fairly as possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, I certainly agree with you about, you know, the concept and the well-meaningness. One of the other ties I wanted to make was that we, in determining salary increases, that we look at not just projected city revenue, but tax revenue. I mean, that this is going to come down to either we take it out of savings or we increase our sales tax or we go to property tax. And so we have to be, I don't want to set up a system that says, okay, we promise we're going to do this and we're going to take it out of, you know, projection of city revenues. And I mean, we have to be, and I referenced the resolution that was passed, resolution CY 1916, when, you know, people really wanted to have a balanced budget. You know, they wanted us to be very careful about not doing new hires and not increasing, you know, without making sure that we have the funding available in advance. So I guess what I'm trying to do is to, as Ben said, you know, we're not going to be paying for payroll out of savings. I mean, I hope we don't have to do that. But it means, you know, if it means that we have to increase sales taxes in order to compete with the park, which I don't think we can compete with the park, I want to make it real clear what we're doing here. Either we're just going ahead and going and agreeing, okay, we're going to be competitive with the state of Alaska market, or we're going to say, well, when we look at the and the size of the community and all is one of the factors, as is the CPI and you know, the tax document that shows the tax burden, current tax burden, you know, on our populace. So I want to have fairly defined, you know, references and you know, so that we go into this with our eyes open. And I'm not real sure the best way of going about getting my comments in. Like I say, I've made a lot of it. This is just basically the two concepts, but it shows like a lot of red. How do we handle sort of having review? Do I submit something that's an alternative resolution showing my changes? Maybe that's a question for Madam Clerk.
We don't have to decide this month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could if other council members, you know, maybe they'd like to look at your approach and compare it And we could schedule this for the next work session in April for more discussion. I think what you are wanting to do is not all that different from what I have in mind, frankly. It's just a matter of how much detail of it to put into the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
My intent is that there are all of these factors, that these are all factors that we would consider when we're reviewing salary levels as part of our annual operating budget. It doesn't say that you use any one of them is prescriptive. And we have to, of course, do it within our broader budget, our revenues and our other expenses, because we're doing a balanced budget. We have to balance our budget, which we do every year. My sense is that there will always be a big factor of judgment by the mayor and the city administrator and the treasurer in working through this process. And we can't probably pin it down to something that is a rote algorithm. It's just too complicated. And there are too many factors that one may be more important one year than another year. And the people making the judgment are going to be different from year to year, have different backgrounds and different experiences that inform their decision-making process, and they're probably going to come to different conclusions. So the idea was to at least set forth a procedure that would provide flexibility and cause the mayor, or assist the mayor and the administrator and the treasurer as they work on the budget, to think to integrate into that a careful analysis of whether we're paying people fairly, what the effect of inflation is, how the labor market has changed. Is it a tight labor market now, or is it a loose one? Right now it's tight, but it isn't always, if there's a high unemployment rate, you can get away with not raising the wages as much. But if you have a really tight labor market, you might have to be more competitive. So those things will vary all the time. And I would like to leave as much flexibility, but if the other members would like us to give this another month, I'm perfectly happy to, and we could put your suggestions in side by side and have a better opportunity to consider the values that your suggestions would bring to it.
Yeah, and I think we're sort of headed towards the same path. I just believe in the precision of language, and being careful about the use of it. But possibly, could we have like two different versions that we could consider at the next meeting? And then that, if the public wanted to weigh in and listen, they could. And if we decide we want to table it at that time, we could table it for more discussion.
Yeah, tabling means it goes away completely.
Oh. Oh.
You can postpone it. Yeah, you can postpone it or whatever. But, the reason we bring these up in a work session is to decide whether they're ready for prime time or not. And if people want some more time to work on it, as I say, essentially this is what we're doing this year with regard to this budget. We're writing this up as a way of, setting forth some guidance for the future, because we have not always been consistent in doing this. Even the timing decisions were made sometimes on giving people raises and things that were completely out of sequence with the budget process. And that's happened in the past. So the idea is to tie this thing, think carefully when we're doing the operating budget about this and integrate it into the budget, the operating budget.
Yeah. And just in terms of how we discuss it, I wouldn't want to just put it off because then we don't really have a mechanism for discussing the various options, other than having another separate work session. Is this something, do we move on till next week? I mean, and discuss it some then?
We can, but this one would be on the agenda. And if you do it that way, then you would have, if you wish to make changes to it, you would have to propose amendments.
Is it possible to have an alternate version of the resolution?
Yeah, you can move to substitute.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, you can do that. So, if I don't know what council members think, Kyle again, we should hear from everybody.
Would that give
Kathy's
us?
Kathy's got her hand up too with ideas, so we'll get to Kathy after you, Kyle.
Would that give us time to decide? Or I mean, with typical amendments, you know, we'd have to kind of then decide on the fly, right? Like if we propose this and Shelley State proposed an amended version, then we're sort of stuck voting on it that night. Is that not true?
Unless you postpone it.
Yeah, any motion can be postponed.
Okay. I just wanted that clarification, because if that were the case, then I would sort of default to like, let's talk about it next month at the work session, then we can look at the two and decide. And I at this point, I think I'd be in favor of looking at that. I would really like to see what you're
just keep it on the agenda for next week. Did I understand you correctly? Or put it off another?
I don't know. I kind of want to hear what everybody else has to say, but I would like to see the two of those, because I do think we're all headed in the same direction on this. It's just a matter of language and making sure that we're not binding ourselves to something that we can't promise, like you're saying, and then also giving us the flexibility. So I would be really interested to see both.
Kathy's had her hand up for quite a while. So let's go to Kathy and then we'll come back.
Okay.
Kathy?
Yeah, thanks. I'm just trying to find out this chart you have that you talk about where there are places, you know, based on the type of property taxes or the tax burden, if you will, that they that may impact the difference in urban areas versus rural areas. I'm wondering if so. Is that suggesting that if we don't have property taxes, that our cost of living may require less of a consumer price index increase? Or I'm trying to figure out why that matters, especially when gas is like $2.50 more a gallon and propane is 40% higher than in the urban areas and stuff like that. So when you talk about apples and oranges, I'm just wondering what that property tax thing has to do with a $9, you know, quart of cream at the store.
I think I launched into my second part without, you know, leaving the COLA behind. This isn't about the COLA or CPI issue at all. It's a separate about how we determine, you know, setting salaries and raises. And I will send you I'll send it also to Madam Clerk, the table and the document. That's the source of it, so you can all kind of see what I'm thinking about. And I guess I like Kyle's suggestion, because having sort of like one or the other, pick one or the other, doesn't give an opportunity to maybe merge, you know, some language or some. So, did that answer your question, Kathy?
Yeah, sure. But I would like to see that table for sure.
Yeah, I'm just about to send out an email, actually, that has that to both you and Karen.
Good, and Karen can send it on to the council. Janine had thoughts.
Yeah, so I am not really clear as to whether or not a place pays taxes is at all even relevant to this document, because we get our money that then balances the budget in a variety of ways, as would any municipality, and the taxes is one way, but we have a balance. We've been balancing the budget and it's in there to balance it. And if we don't, then we have to come up with a different plan. And so as I read the procedure, you know, it doesn't lock us into anything, which I think is a really good thing. It says, you know, that these various things are being made in taking reference to the following. And so they're lined up as to what the things are to think about. It's not giving the council any direction that says they have to react or act in any certain way. They just need to consider those. And then at the bottom, number five, it says projected city revenues, expenses, and the anticipated ability to fund any recommended pay increases. And so, you know, I think we're covering the bases by putting those caveats in there that say these are all the various things to think about, and there's only so many indexes that you can take a look at, and it is all apples and oranges. I mean, if you can talk about expenses and, you know, that we don't have, maybe that's taxes, and that other places do, but those places you can drive somewhere and you get in your car and go to the store. Here, for us to go to get my teeth cleaned in the dentist, I have to pay $200 or more. And so I think there's no way that we are ever going to be able to find, to compare apples and apples. There's no other community that is the same as Gustavus. There's no other community that's the same as Angoon. Everyone, every community is going to have their own ish things. And I think we, you know, we can't ever find something that is exactly the same. And we can only go with what we have. And I think that this document gave, you know, pretty much an outlined a pretty good way to have almost like a flow chart in making up some decisions without telling the councils in the future what those decisions need to be. And so I think it's just the idea that it's like, these are some things to be thinking about and taking in reference these following factors. And I haven't heard you anything that you've put forth that makes me think that whether or not we find places that have the same amount of paying taxes is relevant to these decisions that we're making.
Turn your mic on.
It's that I don't think we can compete. It's a bit of a mandate to have competitive wages. This is the way I read it. And we can't compete with the park. We can't compete with Anchorage. We can't compete with Juneau. So we can't really, I'm saying in paragraph two of the resolution, whereas the city of Gustavus intends to compensate employees fairly as determined within the compensation, determined by the compensation of comparable communities within the state of Alaska employment market, whereas a comparable communities means those communities with a similar tax basis, which does include property taxation, and a population which is within 200 plus or minus of the Gustavus population. And so if we're saying we're going to be giving competitive salaries, we should define what our outer scope is. I mean, do we look at Juneau? You know, it's the tax burden. And I think we're just locking ourselves into having to increase sales taxes if we're going to, you know, trying to be giving salaries that are competitive to some of the urban markets.
As in my period of time as mayor, I've actually worked through this process a number of times, and particularly when we're hiring for a new position and we're trying to figure out what's a fair wage to pay. And so one thing I've always looked at is the AML salary tables. And as you point out, nobody, and as Janine's pointed out too, none of the communities are exactly like us. Craig is quite close, and it's probably a particularly good one to compare. And so I tend to try to look at positions in communities that are similar in size to us and have a similar size government. Craig's is bigger, has a bigger government, for example. But I also look at, I may look at jobs that I think are similar in a larger city, but maybe they're not the same title. So for example, if we're looking at a fire chief position for here, I might look at what they pay for a crew chief or something like that, or a lieutenant in Juneau or Fairbanks or something like that. As a job that would maybe have similar level responsibilities and experience. It's a huge judgment piece across all of that. I don't think I would try to tie it down to cities that are just within 200 people our size. That's helpful, you know, to look at ones that are near to us in size, but are they off the road system or on the road system? Are they a native village or not? Because the structures of native villages are often different for important reasons. Is the job in that village or whatever comparable to what it is in our community? So, but it ends up being really a matter of judgment and certainly open to fallibility. But I don't know that you can tie it down much more closely, you know, and anything you put in that tries to make it a more exact algorithm or something is probably not going to work. That's just kind of my experience from having done this for several years. But all of the things that you raise are the kinds of things that the mayor should have in the back of their mind, probably, as you know, and try to think of how those factors apply to the job at issue. But do you list them all in here? That's part of the question.
But Janine has been.
I just had a question just for clarification. Shelley, when you just were reading something, what page on the document were you just reading from?
Those language.
Okay.
Yep, that's her resolution she's been working on. So I think I'm beginning to see that. I guess I'll start my position is that in areas of complex policy like this, it's better to be descriptive of the things to look out for and the outcomes we're hoping for rather than trying to prescribe exactly how we should go about making the decisions, and that involves a degree of trust in the people of the future and that they will have the same wherewithal or maybe better wherewithal than we do to try and make these difficult and complex decisions. But I do think that Shelley maybe makes a good point as far as maybe being, I won't say more explicit in exact parameters by which to make this decision, but in, for example, we're looking at page 27 on the procedure, perhaps we could add a subheading or a subset of bullets under the third point there and list specific factors which may be relevant to consider. So that a future mayor doesn't have to rely on the tribal knowledge that you've gained over the course of your tenure here. You might say, you know, reasonable things to consider in the process, but not necessarily trying to prescribe, like, this is exactly what we should be looking at. So I feel like that might address a little bit of Shelley's concern about, you know, making sure we're trying to factor for these things, which are certainly relevant, but not locking people of the future into making, you know, the decision based exactly on X, Y, and Z. So that if I were to try and find the middle ground, that's where I find myself is in the procedure. Maybe just laying out some of the, like you've said, these are all things that you do.
Reminders that you think of places you could look or things you might consider.
So could you describe again, prescriptive versus descriptive?
Yeah, so descriptive in my mind is describing the outcomes you're looking for and your concerns in making the decision, whereas prescribing is
basically laying out exactly how someone is supposed to go about making the decision. It's more of kind of the algorithmic mm-hmm. approach that Mike has been using as an analogy, where you're trying to, you know, find all the factors and lay out exactly how it's going to happen. So that's mm-hmm. been my, that would be my preference. Yeah, yeah, that would be my preference, is to describe rather than prescribe.
Thank you, that's helpful.
That's fine with me to add a, you know, few more bullet points under that or something with of things that may be relevant factors. And if you wanted to give me some of those, I could put them in the, add them into the procedure, and that we put on the, in the packet for consideration next week.
I'm concerned that it not be a pick one or the other. So I'm not real sure where we're headed. Are we going to put it off for a month for another work session? Or are we going to discuss this and maybe set it aside at next week's meeting? I mean, it seems like there's room for consolidation of concepts rather than just kind of pick one or the other.
If we're going to consolidate or merge some of these, mm-hmm. I think we need another work session
mm-hmm.
with that kind of a proposal. Okay. With a look at a, you know, you could produce a merged version. I mean, actually, you were editing from mine, I think. Mm-hmm. You did using track changes or something. So that could be a start of one for us to consider. I'm happy to put it off another month. It's not going to hurt us on dealing with our budget. Our budget, we have applied to existing positions, the CPI as a COLA increase for all the existing positions. We have not proposed any other adjustments to any of them. For new positions, we have put in a budget line uncertain as to what we're going to have to pay for people that we may hire, you know, such as a marine facilities coordinator. That would be negotiated in the hiring and would set that. So we've just tried to set a budget range that's adequate. So we don't have to, this isn't critical to us to make our decision on the going forward on the budget over the next couple of months.
Yeah. And as I understand, we can have a conversation as long as three is free. No more than three council members have a discussion about something. I mean, I could talk with you. I could talk with Brian. Brian has a good way of thinking about it. And then maybe come up with a, an agreeable copy.
We're probably okay on that, or possibly okay on that. That's a vague area under the OMA.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be considered a subcommittee that is subject to public hearings, mm-hmm. public meetings. I think it'd be best if you limited it to two people you could say work with Brian or something, mm-hmm. maybe. Okay. I don't know, Madam Clerk, do you have a feeling on that?
Well, this is why when I send out emails that I have you respond to me usually, and then I compile comments and pass them on to the mayor in this case, because he's working on the resolution and policy. So that way we aren't, and that way we're complying with the Open Meetings Act. And that's one reason why we sent this out a month ago, so that you guys could review it and send your comments back for me to compile and the mayor to incorporate those comments so that he could present the best, you know, the best document for this upcoming general meeting.
I think it's best if we, a couple of council members can work on something that they want to propose to the council. I think that's So that's okay. Let's take it off the agenda for next Monday night. And if a couple of you want to work on it and then bring something to the next meeting, I think that would be a better way to do it. You know, if you want to do that, and then we, you know, everybody can, and you can even, and you can give it to the clerk to put on, you know, on the work session, your work product for discussion on the next work session. And then if we think it's ready to take forward in April to the general meeting, we can do it then and vote on it then. Is everybody okay? Janine?
Yeah, yes. But I think if one of Shelley's points is a good point for us to have answered, or is how what would have been the preferred way to have your input put into this? And I guess I is to like how, if you wanted to make a change or you had these changes, how do you go about it? Because it does seem, you know, we sit at a meeting, and then if we get new information right now, how do you communicate to us that you're having thoughts or issues or suggestions, and to present that to the council or to the mayor? Because I think that's a really good question that you put out. It's like, okay, so how should I have, you know, when you asked, how should I have done this if I have these concerns? And I'd be really curious as to what that answer is, because
I think we've actually done it the way that we have to do it. We are constrained by the Open Meetings Act. We can only work on things in public meetings, although a couple of council members, so they're not representing a quorum of the council, can work up something to bring to the council. And we pretty much have to discuss these things and work on them in an open public meeting, which a work session is. Mm-hmm. So the public can tune in and understand what's going on. So that's kind of how we have to do it. So if they want to work up something to bring to a work session, to the next work session, then they can put it in the packet as their proposal, and everybody then, that's posted as part of the agenda, and it's clear that that's something we're going to be talking about, and then we talk about it in the public meeting.
So it could have been, and I'm not putting Shelley on the spot by any, but it could have been, had Shelley come up with the document like before the packet got put together and sent your suggestions to Karen, would that then have been in our packet today to look at?
It could have been, I think. Uh-huh. Yeah, it could have been.
Okay.
Okay. So that'll be the plan. We'll take this one off the agenda for this for next week, and give it a little more work. It doesn't hurt to spend a little more time on it, make sure we're getting it as good as we can. I'm okay with that. Okay. That's all for our agenda then. I mean, for our agenda for next week. I did want to give you a little review of what our treasurer has done, some work on the budget since, or to reflect the discussion that we had at the budget work session. And so he's adjusted a few lines here and there. In fact, we can send this out to you. The clerk can send it out to you, I guess. There are like 8 changes. The big problem was that we had left out the IT services as a cost, and that was identified in the meeting, fortunately, and so we needed to put that in and then address what was necessary to come up with a balanced budget. And remember that we're, you know, my intent has been to balance the budget using carryover only of those things that we know we already have income for and that we're not spending this year, And there were like three things. We didn't have an emergency, or we assumed that we are not going to have a big disaster. So our disaster fund of $50,000 in the budget and the money that was appropriated to cover that will not be spent this year. So we're going to roll that over to next year. So that's one item of the carryover. And there were two or three items that like that, that we knew we were not going to, we know we're not going to have a single audit this year, and we're going to have it next year. So the funding for that, we roll over. At any rate, the rollover of money that we know that we are not going to spend this year that was in this year's budget, we're going to carry over to next year. And that was the $100,000 in the carryover. And we frankly know we're going to have a lot more carryover than that. Right now, we're running over $400,000 in surplus in our budget. So we're going to have more carryover than that $100,000. So, but I wanted to keep it to those items and balance the budget on that. And then once we know how much carryover we really have after the start of the fiscal year, we would then look at whether we want to distribute some of that back into the operating budget to raise some levels that we've maybe left a little thin on the budget plan. So the treasurer has reordered a few things. We listed grant income. We're showing grant income of the PLA grant, which I think was not in it before, against some of the expenses on that grant. The OWL grant for the library is also in there, and a training grant that we routinely get for the fire department are shown as grant income totaling $13,000. So that raises some of our revenue side. We also looked at the ambulance subscription service and realized that we were way low in what we were showing as an anticipated revenue for the ambulance subscription service, because we already this year have something like $1,500. And so we added $700 to that anticipation to make it more realistic. And that still, we think, is conservative. We'll have more than that this year. It's likely we would have more than that, even more than that next year. Lease income, we checked some of our leases that, and we didn't have the full amount of some of the standard leases in there. And so we added $1,011, I think, to bring it in line with this year's incoming rights. And the old post office is going to be leased, and we put in a couple of thousand for that lease, which we think is approximately correct. We lowered building maintenance for City Hall from $4,000 to $500, reduced the Marine Facilities building maintenance budget to zero. At Ben's suggestion, that there just isn't anything for that particular building that need to be maintained. Lowered the GBFD building maintenance budget to $500 and lowered the library building maintenance to $2,000. Now, those are areas that would probably be the first ones to be raised when we actually know what our carryover is from this year. But this is plenty to get us through most of the year on those buildings. So we can appropriate more to those budget lines if we need them. We added the IT service as an expense of $25,020. Corrected the workman's comp level to 5% after, which was a reduction, because that's what we just got that input from Susan Erickson at Wrangell Insurance, our insurer, that so we had more in workman's comp than needed. So we were able to adjust that percentage down and save some money on the budget line. Lowered library program supplies to $2,050, and removed a Marine Facilities training item of $525 that was something that Ben put in there for EMT training, or excuse me, for ETT training, and it was for CPR and first aid training, I think, or maybe ETT. But since Seoul now teaches the CPR and so forth, Ben felt that we didn't actually have to buy that now from outside like we did when he had that training. So we took that out of the budget and added in 3,000 for advanced EMT training for the chief. He has a note that that's offset by a GVFD grant though. So at any rate, by making those changes, we now have a balance of a positive $12. So we have a balanced budget, and it's very conservative because we know we will have a lot more carryover, and not only carryover, we'll have more revenue. We end up with that extra carryover because we understate our revenue pretty strongly. So we expect that'll be the same pattern next year. So that is what with those changes, that's the budget that will go to the town hall discussion later this month. And if any of you have questions, you can ask the treasurer directly. I've worked on a scoping document for fixing about 5 turnarounds, but I'm not going to put it. I didn't have it done for the deadline for this, so I'm going to put it on the April agenda. And that's we're going to fix the turnarounds at the end of about, I think it's 5 cul-de-sacs, to make them more plowable. And actually, they'll look a lot better. We did several of them last summer, and it was a huge difference in how the end of the road looked, and it made for nice entries to people's driveways there. And so we'll do that on these roads: Porcupine, Mary's Road, Meadow Lane, the far end of Glenn's Ditch, and Extra Tough. I think that's all of them. All of them have no real adequate turnaround, although Porcupine's not bad, really. It's we need to cut some brush there and a few things, but so I'm going to put that scoping document on for approval next month, along with an NCO to fund it. And right now I'm guessing the NCO will be something like $30,000, and although that could get refined, but you know, I try to put a little extra in, and we would do all of those as one budget, one capital item budget, so that I don't have to do it out of the operating budget. That takes the pressure for that off of the operating budget. It would still be done probably by our existing road contractor, using the terms for small projects that are in the road maintenance contract. So that makes it easier. I don't have to put out an RFQ for it or something. That's kind of where I'm headed right now on that one. So you'll see that next month. And I think that's, we talked a little bit about the beach sign. You know, we're going to just try to get that fixed up as soon as we can. And we hope the trail will get started out there shortly too, soon. So that's all I had to add for extra notes. Does anybody else have anything they want to raise? Okay. Anybody online? Jim, you're online, or Kathy, anything we missed?
I'm good for now. I don't think we missed anything.
Okay, good. Okay, well then, thanks for all the good discussion tonight, especially on that personnel salaries bit. That was interesting, and that's good discussion. So thanks, everybody, and we'll call it good for tonight, and wish everybody a good evening.
Good